the Keystone Sports Network.
Hello and welcome to the obligatory Keystone Crossover Show. I'm Jim Galante. He's Chris Buccanani. Before we even get started, Chris, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and all that good stuff.
Same to you, Jim. I am hoping by the time people are listening to this, the Outback Bowl is still on.
Fingers crossed for that. For those of us who need our fix of college football, off for a couple weeks, you really need this fix to take you into the off season. So, Chris, let's get right to it. First of all, this is a combination of the obligatory Penn State podcast and the Keystone Sports Network. Chris and I, we find a Penn State or college football topic that we're interested in, and we share it with our listeners. We're alternating back and forth between Chris's site, the obligatory Penn State podcast, and the Keystone Sports Network. This week, obviously, if you're listening, you found us on KSN. Next week, we'll be on Chris's podcast. Chris, why don't you tell our listeners where they can find that and everything else that you guys do that's so fantastic.
Sure, absolutely, Jim. Just get it wherever you get your podcasts. You can look up obligatory and find and subscribe to that feed. I do not know if our affiliate partners are going to run our bowl game special any, many more times here before the game. It's kind of arbitrary, especially with how crazy things are in college football. But if this is the last airing for the year, you can find us next season on statecollege.com. NBC Sports Philadelphia, AT&T Sports Net Pittsburgh, Nesson and Masson once football season rolls around.
Fantastic. You know, when you reach the end of the season or end of the year, very common thing, it's time to make our lists, all right? Mm-hmm. And you had a great idea today. We're wrapping up 21 and the 21 football season, and it's a good time to take a look back and say, all right, what was so memorable about this season? What sticks out in our mind? Chris, what are those highlights for you?
Sure, Jim. Well, I think one of the unique and appealing things about college football is for the people who really love it, the way each season becomes kind of a mile marker in your life. On the show, I like to talk a lot about each college season as its own self-contained story and each week as a chapter in that story. And so now that 2021 is almost over, I started thinking about how am I going to look back on the story of this season? And it was definitely a roller coaster, right? When you start thinking about all the different angles with which you could approach the narrative of 2021 for Penn State and its football program, we packed a hell of a lot into 4 months, didn't we?
Oh, my goodness, yes. And as you said, it was a roller coaster ride, very high highs, and obviously some very deep lows. But that's the start of the season. You start 5-0. That's where you got to start with some of your highs, right?
Yeah, no question. Like again, there's peaks and valleys, and I'm going to be interested to hear some of the things that are going to stand out to you. But I think one thing, even as the season went sour, a memory that is not going to be tainted for me, that I'm going to preserve and cherish as the years go by, is just what a magical weekend we had in Happy Valley. The weekend that Auburn came up to play us, there were so many good things going on for Penn State and for State College. We were coming off the first home game the previous weekend versus Ball State that we'd had in Beaver Stadium in over a year. The town, which had been absolutely smacked by the shutdowns and the quarantines, was starting to see some life breathe back into it and the local economy. That was awesome. I was fortunate enough to be a small part of the premiere of Saving the Roar, the documentary about the 2012 team. And so we had Mike Zordich and Mike Mowdy back in town for that. And they went and addressed the team before the game. I think it was on a Friday or Thursday before that. There was a whiteout. You had an SEC opponent coming to town. We got a really, really good four-quarter game that was entertaining in front of a national audience. There was a lot that went right for Penn State that Auburn weekend that reminds us of just how special and unique a place this can be when everything falls properly into place. And I'm going to remember that, and I'm going to look back on it fondly, even though at the time it felt like the start of something special. And as things went on, it turned out to be maybe not so much, at least not in terms of on-field results.
And it's funny that you brought that up as your first item on the good side of this list. For other reasons, other podcasts, I went back and rewatched that game, okay, just over a week ago. And there were so many entertaining things. But first of all, I do have to mention, my goodness, were there some bad officiating calls in that game. Incredibly bad. It really was. But with that said, the other stunning part to this is Sean Clifford was 28 for 32 passing in that game. Think about that, 28 for 32. And I know you and I, we mentioned this last week when I talked about Sean Clifford coming back being a good thing. But I'd like to remind people, go back, watch that game, and remember that feeling that we had. And remember, early in the season, it wasn't just the win over Auburn. There was also a road victory over Wisconsin. And you're right, there was that feeling. This could be a bit of a magical season.
Didn't turn out that way, but I'll get there. I want to say something else positive that I'm definitely going to remember about this year. We talked a few weeks ago, Jim, about how the transfer portal is going to change the way college programs approach roster management. Well, starting with the transfer portal, Penn State really benefited from a unique combination of factors on its roster this year. When you look at the absolute critical impact of a guy like Arnold Ebiketie coming in and just having a lights out season at defensive end, I love that story. A kid who comes here from Temple and takes his 1 year in the spotlight and makes himself a lot of money while also being an absolutely crucial piece for Penn State coming off the Adisa Isaac injury. And then, you know, a lot of other significant contributors come in through the transfer portal. You can say what you want about Eric Wilson's play at left guard. He started almost every snap there, which indicates that whoever was behind him on the depth chart wasn't any better. Derek Tangelo was a great contributor at defensive tackle. John Lovett, while the running game was uninspiring in general, and I'll get to that in a moment, he brought some spark when we needed it. There was a lot of benefit to be had through the transfer portal, and I'd like to see the coaching staff attack that aggressively. Same to be said for the JUCO ranks. Look at the starting tandem of safeties Penn State had this season. We're wishing Jaquan Brisker the best as he heads off to the NFL. I would love to see the Eagles use one of their three first-round draft picks on him. And we're thrilled to have Jair Brown back for another season. Those are two guys who came to Penn State by way of Lackawanna Junior College. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the seniors who decided to forego a shot at the NFL last season to come back, headlined by Jahan Dotson and the magical season that he had, one for the record books at Penn State. So the benefit that we got as fans in terms of seeing high-level play from players who came to the roster through a variety of maybe unlikely or less looked for ways, whether it was players you expected to be gone last year or ones you didn't even know when last season ended because they came in through the portal. I will look back on those guys and be appreciative of their time in the blue and white.
It's a great point, Chris, and I probably differentiate a little more than you do, you know, a transfer and a JUCO player. The JUCO player just seems to be somewhere halfway between a high school recruit and a transfer, which is fine. But the whole point of all of these things is it's about talent acquisition. And to James Franklin's credit, I think he's very particular about who he brings in to his program.
I do too.
And you see that at every level, the recruiting, the JUCO players, the transfer portal players, but he has now a pretty good track record that we're looking at. And by the way, this past week, they picked up a very good, was it Mitchell Tinsley from Western Kentucky? And I've already had a couple people on our show talk about him. And I think it's worth mentioning, when I was talking about Parker Washington becoming a number one guy next year, our buddy T. Franks essentially said, not so fast. you know, with this, with Tinsley coming in. So it appears that he does have a track record now of bringing in some pretty good players, filling some of the holes. And I think going into the 22 season, Tinsley's not going to be the last transfer portal player we're going to see. We're going to see a couple more holes plugged, aren't we?
I certainly hope so. There are a number of positions that need some help through the portal, no question.
There are. Okay, those are the positives, Chris. Unfortunately, when you're a program like Penn State and you lose five games and finish the regular season 7-5, there are going to be some negatives on your list too, aren't there?
Yeah, no doubt. And look, I understand that the days of smash mouth football and 3 yards in a cloud of dust and all that, all those many football cliches that I may love so much are far gone in the past, although Belichick did win that Buffalo game throwing the ball 3 times, which was a glorious thing. Nevertheless, even in this new wide open era of offense, Penn State has still always been a school that has put great tailbacks on the field, right? Even if you look back towards the arrival of more of a spread attack in Happy Valley, you had running backs like Tony Hunt and Evan Royster, and of course, more recently, Saquon Barkley and Miles Sanders. And so when I look back on this season, I think it's going to be hard to forget that Penn State had quite possibly its worst modern era running attack for a full strength team. So we throw the 65 scholarship era out. We might have had the worst run game this year, Jim, that a Penn State team has had since, you know, Rip Engel was coaching here. And the only competition potentially is the 2003 team. And if you know anything about the history of Penn State football, you know, that is not a roster you want to be in a conversation with in any way, shape, or form.
And it's probably actually even worse than the numbers because of their inability to convert on third and short or fourth and short, where
yes,
you're not looking to pad your numbers at that point. You just want to get 1 yard and get the first down. And they showed themselves incapable of doing that.
Yeah, deficient in every phase of the running game. It was just, it's the more I think back on it and the more I look over the numbers, the more mesmerizing and baffling it is. So that for sure will stick out in my memory. I think another bad thing I will remember, I don't know, not so great thing. One of the other things I'll remember for 2021, and again, this is going back to all the stuff we crammed into these 4 months, the way the season just turned on a dime from 5-0, number 4 ranking in the country, feeling really great about the potential of the team till you go out to Kinnick. Sean Clifford gets hurt. You lose P.J. Mustipher for the season. Huge, huge underrated aspect of how the season turned for Penn State. You lose to Iowa. And at the same time, USC fires Clay Helton. And all the James Franklin to USC nonsense fires up. And we spend two months being gaslit by fans online and voices in the media about like Penn State's deficient facilities. And all of a sudden, if you're connected in any way to the social web, which is probably your own fault if you are, but nevertheless, many thousands of our fans are there and they're communicating, and they absolutely tore each other to shreds over this facilities nonsense as the team totally imploded. So, you know, look, there were some high highs at the beginning of this season, but as it's coming to an end, Jim, and I've said this before, I am not heartbroken to get to the end of this football season for Penn State. I kind of feel like I need a break from the program and more specifically from its fans. And that's depressing to me because I've not felt that way in 35 years as a Penn State football fan.
Just a little reminder, Chris, that what we do is a job, a podcast for those Penn State fans you're talking about. So I'm going to say he wasn't talking about our listeners here. He was talking about the other fans.
Maybe some of yous. We're all sick of each other is my point. This is like a family Christmas day that's gone on a little bit too long. And now it's time for everybody to put a stopper in the booze and just head home. call an Uber if you've had too much.
Yeah, exactly right. It is that way. I'll tell you what, though, what I remember about that, and you accurately described how quickly it changed. It just turned on a dime, as you put it. But what's so bothersome to me is the potential was there. It wasn't like this complete collapse of the team, except for the fact that there was such a huge difference. I felt once Sean Clifford was hurt, it was a different team. And of those losses, so many of them were so close that you think, what if? What if Sean Clifford wasn't damaged goods against Illinois and against Michigan even and Michigan State? And what if P.J. Mustafa were there? They're not big what ifs. It's not a big change for that to have happened and how much different this season could have been.
Game of inches, man. That's the lesson of this season for Penn State and really all around college football. Like I will probably also, as I think back on this season, think about how one toss sweep play or whatever it was to the corner of the end zone that came up literally inches short in the Baylor-Oklahoma State Big 12 championship game changed all of college football, because that was probably the difference between Cincinnati being a playoff team or another group of five team that did absolutely everything they had to get in and still didn't. So it is what it is, man. And the last thing I am going to remember about 2021, I think when I look back on the story of the season for Penn State, is the whole hullabaloo around Iowa fans booing our injured players and all the crazy fallout from that lasted weeks. I mean, you know, I had always kind of respected Kirk Ferentz, and even though I detested the way Iowa had screwed up Penn State's seasons many, many times, I never really had any animus towards their fans. They seemed fine. Iowa wrestling fans maybe go in a different category, but football I'm talking about, just fine. And now I hate them. I hate those people with the fire of 1,000 suns. And again, it's because of the crazy way they treated our players when they were hurt, and then the crazy way that everyone from their head coach on down, who, given the last 14 months in Iowa, probably should have just ducked his head, passed on the question, and moved along, but decided to double down and accuse these, you know, 18 to 22-year-old student-athletes of faking injuries when they clearly were actually hurt. I don't know. The whole thing left a bad taste in my mouth. It made me find a new fan base to despise. And at the same time, I reflect on the fact that it seemed like the biggest, most important thing in the world to every Penn Stater, for at least, again, the very online Penn Staters who I probably overexposed myself to this season. And then it was gone. And when was the last time you thought about that guy grabbing his arm, pretending he was hurt, or that special teams coach falling down on the sideline, or any of the absurdities that were committed by the fans and coaching staff of the Iowa Hawkeyes in the wake of that game or during it? I don't know. It's a strange new world we're living in, man. And I am probably too much of a grumpy old man to live in it.
Well, let me give you the positive spin to that whole story, Chris.
Please do.
It's this. College football, to me, my favorite games are the rivalries. I know for years people, why do we even bother playing Pitt? We shouldn't. You know what? I hate Pitt. That's why I want to play them. I want to feel that much emotion. Amen. I feel that way about Ohio State. I feel that way about Michigan. And guess what? Now I feel even more so that way about Iowa. How much fun is it going to be to play Iowa again? A lot of fun, because of that feeling that you got in that game. That's my positive spin on it. Chris, I'll give you the last word.
No, I like that, Jim. I'm going to let it sit on your last word, that you took something that kind of struck me as a negative, turned it around, and made it a positive. And I think that's a lesson we can all carry with us forward into this new year, especially as it looks like we're going to do the whole damn coronavirus thing again. This is like, this is just turning into a bad trilogy, it seems. So my best wishes to everyone who's listening, to revert back to what Jim said earlier. Of course, I do deeply appreciate all the listeners of this little thing that we've been doing of KSN, the viewers and listeners of Obligatory throughout the years. It's awesome. I love the audience and I do love the fan base. And I have gotten myself off Twitter almost completely over the last 40, 45 days. And my mental health is considerably better for it. So if you're listening and you're connected to the Twitter app, take it from me. Disconnect for a little bit and just see if your brain feels better.
Good happy advice. Holidays,
Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
Merry Christmas. Hopefully they play the Outback Bowl. Happy New Year to you, Chris. To all our listeners, thank you so much. Couldn't do it without you. That is it for our show today. Thank you all for listening. Be sure you join us next week on the Obligatory Keystone Crossover Show.
Keystone Sports Network.